evening, and welcome to Financial Time Machine. I'm Megan Thomas. Tonight, we're stepping back into another chapter of everyday American life, exploring the money, culture, habits, and quiet routines that shaped previous generations. From grocery stores and family dinners, to old advertisements, retirement dreams, and the way people once thought about debt, security, and success. This podcast is a journey through the forgotten rhythms of American life. Somewhere between nostalgia and history, there's usually a lesson. Let's find it. This is Financial Time Machine. Picture this. Late afternoon light folding across a wooden porch. A bell tinkles as Mrs. Carter pushes open the door of Miller's Grocery, and the smell of coffee and sawdust and fresh bread settles into the room. On the counter, beneath a brass lamp, sits a ledger, leather spine, dog-eared pages full of looping names. A child tugs at a sleeve, while a mother, cheeks warm from gardening, murmurs, "Put it on my tab, Mr. Miller." The clerk nods, flips the page, and writes, "Carter, May 12th, one loaf, 2 cans, 50 cents. For many Americans in mid-century towns, that ledger was as important as a bank book, a record of trust, obligation, and community memory.
Let's sit at that counter for a little while and talk about how these simple, handwritten accounts worked and what they meant. In towns across the country, from the 1920s through the 1960s and even later, local shops extended credit not with a plastic card or a written contract, but with a name in a book, a polite nod, and a social expectation. The systems were low-tech, chalkboard tabs for daily tabs, indexed card files by family, and a ledger kept behind the register where the shopkeeper entered purchases and payments. It was quiet bookkeeping, but it ran on noise you couldn't print. Gossip, reputation, and years of familiarity.
Mechanically, accounts were straightforward. A customer, often a regular, would ask to have items charged. The clerk would jot the date, the items, and the amount in a shared ledger. At month's end, or at payday, families would come in with cash stuffed into envelopes, sometimes with a small note, sometimes with an IOU tucked in the flap. Payments were recorded next to purchases, a neat subtraction, a balancing of names. What's striking is not the arithmetic, but the social accounting underneath it. The storekeeper acted as an informal banker, a keeper of names and stories, and a memory for the neighborhood's financial rhythms.
There are human stories stitched through this practice. I've read old letters where a mother would apologize to the grocer for being late, explaining a sick child or a stalled wagon. The grocer would reply with a line like, "Bring what you can, we'll be here." But there were darker threads, too. Informal credit could exclude newcomers, or it could be wielded as leverage by shopkeepers who knew intimate details of a family's hardship. Men and women of color and recent migrants often found doors closed when they asked to open an account, or they were charged higher markups. It's important we remember that these systems could comfort and constrain people in unequal ways.
So why did these systems persist for so long? Part of the answer is practicality. Banks were distant, paperwork was fussy, and wages were irregular for many workers. A family could not always wait for formal lending channels. The local store filled that gap with a kind of public trust. Another reason was relationship. The grocer often knew 3 generations of a family, their work schedules, and the ebb and flow of their income. That knowledge reduced risk in a way that a cold credit score could not. It also fostered accountability. Being named in a ledger meant being seen.
There are archival snapshots that make this vivid. In a 1950s photograph, you can see a storekeeper standing behind a counter lined with jars of candy, a ledger open like a small Bible. In oral histories, older residents recall the ritual of settling accounts after payday, men walking down Main Street with a pay envelope, women treating small talk as they handed over coins. These rituals were social glue. They made money movement visible and regular. They also taught children lessons about promises, delayed gratification, and community responsibility, lessons that feel foreign in a world of instant digital payments.
But as credit modernized, bank cards, consumer credit, and later digital ledgers, those personal mechanisms receded. What we gained was convenience, quick credit approval, broader access, and the ability to defer large expenses. What we lost, in many places, was the quiet accountability embedded in seeing your name in a book. Today, a charge posts anonymously. A missed payment is a number in a database. The social ritual, the neighborly conversation, the handwritten apology letter, those became rarer.
That doesn't mean we should romanticize the past. Informal credit could be precarious and unjust. Accountability could tip into shame, and the power imbalance between storekeeper and customer could be large. Nor is it practical or wise to try to reconstruct those systems wholesale in a modern economy. But there are modest, helpful practices we might borrow. Clearer expectations around borrowing, simple household ledgers that keep money visible, and local networks that provide short-term support without predatory terms. Small rituals, paying a neighbor back with a baked pie and a note, or keeping a shared lending list at a farmer's co-op, reintroduce the human dimension to transactions.
If you're wondering how to translate this to your life, start small. Track household expenses in plain sight, an index card on the refrigerator, a shared note in your phone, a weekly check-in about budgets. Cultivate reliable local ties. Swap babysitting hours, join a mutual aid group, or find a trustworthy independent shop where your name matters. These aren't replacements for formal financial advice or banking protections, but they restore a sense of mutual responsibility that many of us miss.
As we close, imagine once more that ledger on the counter. The ink, the looping handwriting, the little columns of debts and repayments. There's a small dignity in seeing your name written and then crossed off when you make good on a promise. It reminds us that money is ultimately social, an arrangement built on trust, habit, and language. Maybe we can keep the efficiency of modern finance and borrow just a bit, the moral clarity of a name in a book.
And that's where we'll leave our journey tonight. The past may look different through modern eyes, but sometimes, hidden inside old routines and forgotten traditions, we find pieces of ourselves we've been missing. Thank you for spending a little time traveling through history with me.
If you enjoyed tonight's episode, please subscribe to Financial Time Machine. Tell a friend, leave a rating, or send us a memory from your own town ledger. We read listener stories on the show, and we'd love to hear yours. Dadgum. Until next time, keep one foot in the past.
Good night, and thanks for listening to Financial Time Machine.